Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit drinking.
Hey, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, opening Stacks and Jacks, sent them out. We had Burn on the board, Jim Waller in studio. We have an interesting group this morning. We're going to have our usual Monday group, which is John Flanagan and Nancy Long Graham. But we're also going to have Mr. Bill Moriarty talk a little bit about these floods in Texas, awful as they are, trying to get together who's supposed to do what on floodplains and how often they're reviewed and all kinds of crazy stuff. And Bill is obviously very good at that, so we might as well get, instead of just opining, we'll have Bill on in a second. And once in a while, Jimmy, is we're supposed to be giving a quick sports report here. Once in a while, the creatures from Stocks and Jacks are actually vindicated in some of their opinions. It does not happen often. But, I mean, I've talked from time to time. Once in a while, I push back on the stat people of the world in baseball, which is very dangerous now, right, because it's all stats.
Yes.
If you go up with a new stat, it's, you know. But having a guy like me and Kevin who have played softball for. Boy, I love coughs in the morning. Guys that have played softball for a while, somehow, especially if you pitch forever, you sort of realize that baseball is way more of a team game than these stat cats will ever have you believe. You know, they think it's all one-on-one, blah, blah, blah. Well, what's her name? Taylor McGregor. Actually, I think does a really nice job. She's like the third person on the Cub broadcast team. Once in a while, who's the other lady fills in for who does the after-show stuff?
Oh, I don't know her name, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but anyway, she's interviewing the Cub pitching coach. And I'm sitting there going, God, this guy wants to listen to Stocks and Jacks. She asked him about the team this year, and they've got a really balanced lineup. And everybody's doing pretty good. And I've mentioned, and Kevin actually didn't even disagree with me, that the when everybody starts to hit, all of a sudden you get better pitches than you would otherwise. And I certainly knew this from 40 years of pitching softball. I mean, if you got a couple of good hitters on a crummy team, if they got people on base, they know they're their team's only chance. You throw it behind their head, and they're gonna swing at it. Well, this guy was talking about how the Cubs have had a situation where, up till now, he says, they always had a pretty good lineup, but they were in the standard routine now of everybody who wants, you know, you take a whole bunch of pitches, you try and tire the pitcher out, I mean, you do those kinds of things, and you know, that's okay. But he says, now they have such a good lineup that everybody, they think, can hit. So he says, we don't want to do that anymore. Now we know the guy after whoever it is going to be just as good and just as capable of hurting the other team. So if somebody wants to feed us one down the middle, we want to swing it, because we don't always want to go to 0-1 or 1-2 and put the advantage in the pitcher. If it's there, we want it, because the guy. So we've got people attacking in the zone, which we never coached before, really, to the extent that we do now. And he goes, and I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, what's his name? The shortstop's got more home runs than he did all last year, and a lot of these other guys are doing well. He says, we want everybody attacking in the zone. We don't want anybody hanging around just trying to get a 10-pitch walk because we're trying to get the pitcher out of the game, because we think every one of our guys can hit. We've totally turned our strategy around. So I thought that was real interesting.
Good. Yes, I think that is.
I
always thought you were supposed to go up and take your cuts. I mean, that was back, what, Little League? Go up there, Jimmy, take your cuts?
Well, you weren't supposed to go. You're always supposed to swing at the good pitch.
Right.
Because you're looking for one. I mean, even in softball, the guy wants to pitch you outside, you take it to right field. I mean, if you want to pitch you inside, you try and yank it down the line. I mean, it's all about where the ball is. I mean, it's anyway. We wanted to talk today about this. What's going on at Camp Mystic and in Texas? And we just happen to have a resident expert on all this stuff, Mr. Bill Moriarty. Bill, how are you? Are you here? You're with us? I see.
I'm doing good, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing good for an old dude. You know, no, doing fine actually. Clients are happy. Everybody, you know, the market's been crazy, but we've been kind of riding the horse pretty well. In fact, we're down 17 today, and the S&Ps were down 67, and the NASDAQ, as we are launching tariffs on Europe and Mexico now. We're not, this tariff thing is a little crazy, but anyway, I was doing a lot of study this weekend on this flood in Texas, and usually, I don't know if you were able to listen last Thursday when Lou was talking about how, well, first he talked about the switches on the plane that went down and how there had been no maintenance missive sent out for 787s, which kind of means that they felt something was wrong. Although I did send, I should have sent it to you last night. I was listening to some of the people on YouTube talking about the crash and how the switches got moved. And then there was this one guy I listened to late last night, and he's convinced that something else happened. That something did go wrong with the plane, and these guys were trying to restart it. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. But the Lou was also talking about the crash of the Concorde. I don't know if you listened to that part where he said that they made him use a Jimmy. What was the reason why they made him use a shorter runway? Was somebody else? Was the president or something? Somebody was taken off.
Yeah,
on the
The president wanted to see the final takeoff.
Yeah, okay.
The president of France. Yes, I remember this.
So, and the plane was slightly overloaded. And they put a little too much fuel in there for some reason. They're supposed to never top the thing off, but they did. And then something else happened. But then they whacked the wrench or whatever it was on the runway, not the wrench. And all of a sudden, they couldn't save the plane. And Lou says it's always, if they had a little longer runway, a little less, a little less weight in the thing, because this was
and
over,
more speed.
And had
more
speed. You know, they would have. They might have been able to, even with the one engine gone, they might have been able to save the thing. It's always, and I saw having that in the back of my brain, I started looking at about what's going on down in this Texas thing, in this Camp Mystic. God, Bill, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, building here a year after the new regs came out, they didn't go back and change them. But I sent it to you, but there's a picture. I guess my first question to you, are we giving out stupid pills in this country? This guy, there's always a guy filming now, right? Somehow. The guy's filming the river from this bridge, you know, regular old bridge, and he's filming the river, and all of a sudden he sees this, like, bulge of water coming down. It's all on camera, and it looks like the river's flow just kind of just doubles, like, instantly. Yet, you know, it's still way below the bridge, and all of a sudden kind of gets more and more and more pretty rapidly to where the water is now up as high as the bridge. And then it gets to the spot where it's flowing across the middle of the bridge. And all these idiots in their cars and pickup trucks are driving madly across the bridge to get over it before... What... We're talking about if that ever was too high and you got swept, you'd be swept down river and never seen or heard from again. Not like a viaduct in Chicago, for God's sake. And all these idiots are racing across the bridge to try and beat the flood. Now all of a sudden, there's branches, there's trees, all kinds of stuff whacking into the bridge. And then all along comes a house with the garage still attached, some frame garage, and it bangs into the bridge. Whoever built the bridge did a nice job. I think the bridge held somehow. I'm sitting there going, so finally the cops show up and they tell the idiots to stop crossing the bridge. And they tell this guy, by the way, you need to get off the bridge too. He's still sitting there filming. Where are they passing out? You're in Texas. Where are they passing out the idiot pills? I mean, what is the deal?
Yeah, that was a real bad episode down there in Kerrville, which is about 100 miles from where I live. It's considered, you know, one of the many little towns in what's known as the Texas Hill Country. And
when you say hills, Bill, how big are these hills? You know, people don't think of Texas and mountains. How
big? They're not big mountains at all. It's just hilly, you know. And it all kind of starts in the western part of Austin, where you go from kind of flatland to, and I'm guessing, over the course of 100 miles, it probably goes up, 300 feet, something like that. But it's hilly, and it's kind of picturesque. And a lot of people, when they retire around here, like to move out to those little towns because it's a lot cheaper to live. So you end up with a largely a retirement community, and people that are into seasonal ventures like campgrounds. And there's lots of campgrounds. I took my kids out there when they were small for camping stuff. And so many of those communities, as I said, were small, and they're not sophisticated in a lot of things like flood control, and because they have these things from time to time, where they had a bad flood there in 1987, and over the years people forgot about it. But I think the story that is yet to be written, and I think you are catching on to it real well, Tom, is they're going to discover that a lot of those buildings that were flooded out shouldn't have been there. And I can only imagine the personal injury attorneys that are working a list of people that were killed in this thing. And I would believe they would be coming after the camp operator and the city and see if there's something. Because normally, and you've mentioned the FEMA flood mapping system, and which is a very robust system. It's all over the country. You basically have a website, and if you want to see where your house stands with respect to the 100-year flood zone, you can look it up on the internet. Cities are supposed to police that, and most, through their city codes, say you can't build in here. But it's possible that guys get around that, under some exemption where they said, well, this isn't really a house. This is just a dormitory for summer use or something. And I know nobody's thinking or saying this now because they're still into the recovery mode. But once this settles down, you'll see, I predict you'll see some pretty significant litigation because there's so many deaths, and not just deaths, but deaths of kids. It's just going to drive.
Well, there's an article here in the New York Post that we'll post out to everybody. But how do you rate? I mean, I know a little bit about this because obviously Audrey is in the real estate stuff, and I've learned a lot from Nancy. And in the Midwest, you have floodplains. Obviously, you have floodplains everywhere, but the floodplains here, I mean. If you have the Tinley Creek, for instance, you could be in the floodplain, and the guy across the street who's 2 feet higher isn't. So you have to get flood insurance, and he doesn't. But basically, if you ever have a little more of a flood, it's going to reach somebody's backyard or basement. There's no elevation change. There is a little bit. Obviously, it wouldn't flow, but it's not. I wouldn't consider it. That dangerous. I mean, it's not going to. I mean, I suppose it could be a storm where it grew somewhat, but it's not like this thing. How do you rate? How do they rate? A floodplain, clearly in Virginia, when you got mountains on your left, is a little different than a floodplain in Tinley Park. How does that get rated? And how often? Every time you get one of these big storms, how often does somebody review the bidding? I mean, and go back and say, wait a minute. Like Houston, they had those problems. Wasn't one of the biggest issues is half the places that were flooded weren't even considered a floodplain?
Yeah, I mean, when they give you the 100-year floodplain, well, what happens if you have a 500-year storm? In other words, a much larger storm. Well, yeah, a lot of places that aren't supposed to be in the floodplain are now in the floodplain. So the people that create those maps, and they're universal throughout the United States. I'm not saying they have maps everywhere where there's no development, but anywhere where there's houses and development, those maps are managed and updated and prepared by knowledgeable people who study rainfall events and hydrological events and update them. And, you know, after they have storms like this, they go out and see where the water got to and compared with the amount of rainfall they received. And they make changes, you know, because the watershed could change. So I think that system is fairly good. I mean, I think they do a pretty good job. And again, this idea, well, we're just going to shut down FEMA. Well, who's going to take care of that? Those maps. Are we just going to toss those to the wind?
I think you have a situation where somebody's shutting stuff down. They don't even know what they do, which is pretty scary.
You know, in Chicago, if my memory serves me right, the group that managed all this floodplain stuff was the Metropolitan Sanitary District of Greater Chicago. And they just, their entire region, they look after that. So if you're going to put a subdivision in with 200 houses, you've got to submit the drainage calculations to their engineers, and they're going to look it over and make sure that you're not causing flooding downstream or on someone else's property. But there's also a little click. You know, once things get declared a floodplain, and a lot of people don't like that because now I owned a piece of land that isn't worth much, there's a whole niche community of people that will get the floodplain revised. You know, there's techniques that you can use and, you know, do targeted detention in certain places, you know, to get suddenly so people do that. There's a term called letter of map revision. And that's a process where you can go in and petition to have those maps modified. And again, I think this situation over here in Kerrville, when it's all said and done, and we won't know this for several years, they'll probably find that some number of those camp buildings shouldn't have been there, were approved mistakenly or, you know, whatever.
Well, there's something here. Have you ever heard of the term the floodway?
Right.
Well, according to this article in the Post, and I'm quoting this, you know, if I'm quoting it, I probably should. It was written by a gentleman named Anthony Blair, and it's got maps in the cabins where the older kids were, the dining hall and the rec hall and so forth. Well, the older kids, is Senior Hill, they call it, was 600 feet from the river's normal bank, right?
Okay.
And it's up somewhat. So right. I'm thinking that one probably is, it might technically be in the floodplain, but it's pretty damn safe, right? They got the rec hall and the office and those things up there. Now, the junior cabins are only 225 feet and lower. And evidently, they did a review of this. The thing, we had a $6 million remodeling project, I'm going to say 6 years ago. And a year after, they redid this floodway thing, $5 million overhaul project. And the 19 of the cabins are now considered in the flood zone. But some of them are in the extremely dangerous area that they call a floodway. In other words, those are the ones where not only you might get wet, but you might get washed out. So 6 years ago, the camp, founded in 1926, was expanded into a $5 million construction project, but instead of relocating cabins to higher ground, new ones were added in the flood zone. Now, how they managed to get around that at the same time, guys, it says some of the cabins were so close to the banks, they were considered part of the river's floodway, meaning any construction is either banned or extremely restricted by many states and counties. So that's kind of strange, because it looks like they had all kinds of property, Bill. But, and not only that, you know, I was talking about little things come together. The only county that didn't feel it necessary to have, you know, huge sirens, like an air raid siren, was this county. So, yeah, you could try and contact people in the middle of the night, but they didn't have, you know, the air raid sirens like you have in Chicago, or the tornado sirens. Why would that particular county be the only one to decide they don't need them? I mean, talk about a mixture of crazy decisions, huh?
I totally agree. And, you know, a lot of the state agencies in Texas that have anything to do with flood planning and flood programming, they all have grants and low-interest loans to put in warning systems. They're very commonplace. Now, I'm going to guess the reason that Kerrville didn't do it, again, a lot of these places are not terribly sophisticated, but they probably had to dig into their pocket for some of the money and didn't want to do that. And also, probably, again, you've got this retirement community where people were saying, you mean we're going to have these sirens going off all the time? Because, you know, you're going to wake us up, and 90% of the time it won't be for a real flood, it'll just be some suspected flood. And I'll say this, since this happened on the 4th of July, we're getting flood warnings like crazy. I mean, one cloud goes by and there's a warning. And everybody's on their toes, you know. So I think there's going to be some criticism with the players down there, including the manager of the operator of the camping ground. And, you know, one of the reasons they wanted to put the buildings close to the river is it's convenient for the kids to go swimming. You know, they don't have to, you know, march a half a mile down to the riverbank. You know, they're right there.
Is this river clean enough to swim in?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. It's a very high quality water, and it's largely it's not intensively developed out there. You know, it's pretty much country streams. So yeah, you would be able to go right in that river and swim or wade or, you know, take your little inner tube or whatever. Well,
what's the normal depth of this thing? It didn't look like it was pretty very deep.
No, normally it's probably not deep at all. And matter of fact, normally it might be an intermittent stream where there's, you know, it goes a while and then there's nothing and then there's a little more, you know. We've been basically in a drought around here for the last several years. So a lot of these streams have dried up to the point you don't even know they're there. But suddenly you get enough, like, and I saw some of the rainfall numbers from that part of the state. You know, they got like 12 inches of rain in a couple of days.
That's kind of a lot.
That's going to flood anything. Yeah, you're going to get flooded. So that is a whole lot of rain in a fairly small watershed. And, I mean, to see the elevation of the river go up 20 feet in 45 minutes, that's pretty unusual. And it's just a real tiny watershed that got a bunch of rain dumped on it, and it had nowhere to go, so it backed up.
Well, then this weekend there's a river north of there that normally is 2 feet and went to like 15. I don't think it causes much damage, but it's just north of wherever this is, maybe a couple hundred miles. There's another river
We've had other rivers around here, northwest of Austin and north of Austin, where they had flooding and killed people there too, but they didn't kill 120 of them. You know, yeah. It was like 10, 12 people in various little towns. You know, the fire chief in a town called Marble Falls got killed. You know, here's a guy who was the fire chief. You would think he would know what he was dealing with. In some way, he got swept away in his pickup truck. And there's been, there's been probably, outside of Kerrville, there's probably been 30 or 40 other fatalities and other various little flood episodes.
Well, unless you go to some place, I mean, obviously here in the Midwest, I mean, the floods are basically in your basement, right? I mean, in Chicago, you know, you can get some flooding in some of the burbs. You get the Tinley Creek, you can get those kinds of things that'll spill over. But, you know, you have to get some appreciation. And Bill was nice enough to come out to Las Vegas with me one time and went to Hoover Dam and talk about getting an education. You bring your own engineer with you. But the first time I ever went out there, Bill, you know, remember Jim Doherty, Doc Doherty? He drags me out there, and we stay at a place called the Flamingo Capri, which was this motel next to the Flamingo that became the Imperial Palace, and now that's down, I guess. But anyway, it was this hotel, this crummy hotel, motel, motel meaning, you know, the doors pointed out, not to a hallway. It was two stories. In the bottom, there were like four rooms missing. There's big yellow lines in the parking lot saying, don't park here, because it kind of went down and came back up. This is a dry wash. So whenever it rained, if ever you're out like in Vegas and see it rain, it's a whole different program than it is here. I mean, the water can't soak in any place. It just runs. Actually, the street between Bally's and the Flamingo, whatever, that's Flamingo Avenue, I think. That's actually part of a dry wash. If it's raining on one side of the street, the water's rushing by about 6 inches deep. I mean, you don't see anything like that here. But in these kinds of areas, there's no place for us to go, is there, in the hills, except go.
Well, probably one of the most interesting flooding things I ever saw was back in the 80s, and I was working in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I, for whatever reason, was watching local TV, and they were coming on television and saying, hey, everybody, we're going to have a bunch of rain north of town here. And even though it's not going to rain in Albuquerque, you never know what that could do, because it'll come through these, I think they called them washes.
Yeah, dry washes, yeah.
Dry wash. And said, so, you know, if your kids are like skating in the dry wash on the concrete business, you know, get them out of there, because this stuff will come down like nothing. So I'm watching this, and the TV stations are wise to how to cover this. You know, they know that even though it's raining 20 miles north, it's eventually going to come down. So they station cameras down the wash, because they know there's going to be some great pictures. So all of a sudden, the TVs are covering this like it's, you know, something else, and it's quite compelling to watch. I'm like, I can't believe this happening. And then all of a sudden, you see this wall of water just come out of nowhere, and there's a kid who's skateboarding, the thing that they told him not to do, and he couldn't escape, and you see the kid get caught in the water, rushing. I mean, this water is moving like 5 feet per second. It's moving quickly, and the kid is just struggling to so anyways, the fire department in Albuquerque, they're ready for this too. So what they do when they know there's people in the water is they dangle firemen from a bridge with the idea that he's going to catch the kid.
Wow.
And I'm like watching this, and I said, can this really happen? And by God, here comes the kid going 5 feet per second. The fireman grabs him. And like the TV station, you could hear everybody cheering, like, what an incredible thing that this guy catches this kid. So I'm watching this, and he's holding on to the kid amidst this flowing water. Well, here comes a couch down the dry wash, moving at 5 feet per second. The couch hits the fireman and the kid. So now the kid is loose again, and the fireman's loose, and the couch is loose, ripping down the dry wash. I think they recovered him, but I was like, you could have made a movie with this.
Well, there's a whole area in Scottsdale. We'll go to break here in a second. It's this big recreational thing. There's a bike path in there. There's a walking path. There's some tennis courts. There's some soccer fields. The whole thing is a wash. And then whenever it rains, they get everybody the hell out of there.
Right. Yeah, they build those things, compatible uses in the floodplain, that if it does rain, yeah, you're not going to hurt anything with those kind of things. So
we're going to ask you after a quick break. We come back with Mr. John Flanagan. I know he has some questions, because he's our attorney dude, and he knows all about floodplains and so forth from the legal side. SB Futures down 21, NASDAQ Futures down 86. Real quick break, because we got an interesting show going here. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Matt Byrne on the board. We got Mr. Jimmy in the office with us, and on a mic we have Bill Moriarty. We also have Mr. John Flanagan. We'll have Nancy later. S&P futures up 21. Nasdaq futures up. I'm sorry, down 21. Nasdaq futures down 85. Dow futures down 136. Individual stocks. We actually have Boeing up $3. That's interesting. I don't know what that report's going to end up. I saw conflicting things about that in these YouTube videos I was looking at. IBM down 234, nothing else going crazy. Microsoft down 220 over in Europe. We got crazy stuff today. Trump is going to come out with some kind of an announcement on Russia. He lapped some more tariffs on the world this weekend in EU and Mexico, I think. Anyway, DAX down 271, 1.1%. FTSE up 28.3%. CAC around down 47.6. European markets head south after Trump slaps 30% tariff on EU. So I guess that doesn't include Britain. So there. Nikkei down 110.3%. Hang Seng up 63.3%. Hang Seng up 9.3%. So all 3% over there, but not all the same direction. Bonds, pretty much unchanged, 2.73 in the 10-year rate. Japan up 9 basis points. Wow, 1.59. It's a big move for those guys. We've got oil, which has been creeping up here a little bit. Up 81 cents, 69.26, but still in the 60s. Brent up 78 cents, 71.14. Natural gas up 15 cents, 3.47. We've got gold, which has been moving up, up 15 bucks, 33.79. Silver, which has been the kind of the outlier mover, is up another 36 cents, 39.31. Copper down 8 cents, 5.51, but still way above the $5 level when the tariff went through and the stock ran up, or the future ran up. FX. I'm talking about FX. We got the euro pretty much unchanged at 117. The British pound, same thing, 135. Crypto, we got another 2,400, 121,654. So in crypto, we trust. You can't really say a whole lot about a stock trading for a high PE when you've got artificial stocks that don't have any PE. Anyway, Matt, what do you got for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning,
Cubs
everyone.
Win.
Oh, yeah, we got that to look forward to. Currently 6:40 a.m. on July 14th, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Byrne Interchange at 41 minutes, outbound at 26. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB at 43, outbound at 40. Weather in Chicago, 66 degrees at O'Hare and 67 at Midway. High of around 88 today. Sunny with some hazy, as you can see this morning. Tonight, mostly clear skies and a low of 71. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now. Hot and hazy as well. The temperatures are set to reach 109 degrees today. Watch out for that. Very warm with plenty of sunshine. Over in the MLB, White Sox at home yesterday lost to the Guardians, only a point away, 6-5. Cubs, meanwhile, away in New York, beat the Yankees 4-1. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Yeah, do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
John, pile in when needed. I'm going to ask Bill a question. I'm not going to ask you some crazy question about global warming or weather change, Bill, but it seems like, maybe just we hear more about it, that this localized stuff. We had a storm here in Chicago last week where if you looked at all the rain gauges, I'm here in the morning driving in for the show that all of the viaducts are flooded on the near west side. So I come in and I go, what the hell is that all about? So I go, if you're like at the expressway in, say, Irving Park, it was like half an inch of rain. By me, maybe an inch. It was a pretty good storm. And all of a sudden you start marching toward the west side, inch and a half, two. When you get to the United Center, it's like almost five. It was like 4.5 where that particular spot. And I was telling Jimmy, Mr. Jim Lawler on break, if you look at the Chicago, if you say, what's the wettest month in Chicago? If you look at the Midway gauge, it's going to say June. If you look at the O'Hare gauge, which they now take the weather from, they're going to say September. And you might say, why the hell is that? Way back, it was, I don't know what year it was, I'm thinking it was maybe early 90s. All my, I won't say my idiot buddies, but I just did, and the OEX decided to go out to Vegas. You can only imagine, guys. Go out to Vegas for a stag party for some guy who's getting married, right? And they, of course, wanted me to go. I go, no way you're getting involved in that. let's just say they were a bunch of married guys with a hall pass. Is that a fair statement, Bill and John? Nothing's worse than that. And I don't know how much money they all had, because it was back when people were making a lot of dough in the OEX. And off they go. The only problem is we had this rainstorm, and right about the Kennedy Expressway and, say, Irving Park, that area had 9 inches of water. The rest of the city got a pretty good storm, but the expressway was totally closed. The Blue Line tunnels were filled up. You could not get to O'Hare unless you had a helicopter or you're riding on the back of a pigeon. So these guys never made it to Vegas. So, of course, let's just say the strip joints and bars in Chicago and whatever gambling establishments, I don't know if they made it to the casino or what they did, all the money they were going to spend on the trip was gone by Saturday morning. You can only imagine. But to this day, if you use the O'Hare gauge, they picked up 9 inches, or Midway only got like an inch that day. So that difference, I mean, I guess this localized stuff, but I guess it's always been like that, but why is it just, we hear more about it now? It seems odd to me that one block's going to get 4 inches of rain and 2 miles away gets a half an inch. I use the term normal?
I think it's becoming normal. These localized, intense rainfall events. I mean, what people predicted with global warming is that we would see the extremes, right? I just mentioned to you, for the last 3 years, we've been in a drought. Not enough water. Communities denying building permits to guys that want to build houses. There's no water for you to build the houses, so go away. And then we go from literally that on July 1st, and on July 4th, we're, 12 inches of rain in a couple of days, and massive destruction and loss of life. And that seems to me to be the way this is playing out. We're seeing these extreme events. One, too much water. The other, not enough water. And I think if you charted it, and I haven't done that, but if you went back, you'd probably see a little more even play with the amount of water coming down.
Well, it seems like... Jen, feel free to pile in. It seems like the tornado alley has shifted south. Oh, is that happen? I mean, I don't know. There's nobody around in the 1500s, 1600s that could chart all this stuff. Does that just sort of happen every once in a while, or every 50 years or so? But I mean, if you're gonna chase tornadoes 5 years ago, you'd be out in Kansas with Dorothy, right? I mean, or Nebraska. Now it seems like if you're looking for tornadoes, you got to be a couple hundred miles south. Or is that just me?
No, the pattern has definitely shifted, and it's hard to explain. If you look at a place like Illinois, and specifically, you know, the metro area here, there's been a speculation that, you know, the concentration of taller structures in big numbers and very tall when you get close to downtown possibly has an effect of, you know, neutralizing, you know, the ability of wind speeds to develop quickly and to, you know, sit around for a while enough to create a tornado. And I don't know that, you know, any tornado has struck downtown, not in my lifetime. There's been a couple in the Chicago city limits, but I think, it, you know, there's a lot of things we really can't predict with great certainty about conditions. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with land development and, you know, the relationship between, you know, watered areas, dry areas, concrete, open land, trees, you know, crops. All of this stuff has, I think, subtle effects on the ability of some storms to, you know, really ratchet up and get a, you know, a lot of momentum to them. But it definitely, if you look at the way that the storms have moved around Chicago, that Tornado Alley phenomenon has definitely changed.
And well, they had always had for the trailer park, and the trailer park around the South Burbs.
Some magnetic effect. But even, you know, the Oak Lawn one in 67, Tom, you remember that one. And Belvedere and other towns that were hit that day. There's things that they're anomalies in some ways that you can't say, well, these conditions will never exist precisely in this pattern ever again. It's like a snowflake or something. Everyone is unique. And every second of meteorological time is unique, given that there's other stuff happening around it that will ultimately have an effect on it. You can't plot it all out ahead of time. I was looking just recently at, you know, the big tornado episodes in the Midwest over the last 100 years or so. They're very hard to explain, other than that it's just a perfect storm, no pun intended, of, you know, hydrological events and you know, things around us or nearby places that have conspired sometimes to just create, you know, an explosion of storms, all moving in pretty much the same direction and with some predictability. But that isn't something that I think, you know, the science really understands adequately. And we've gotten a lot better at predicting conditions, but we still have to have spotters, and we still value, you know, video records of stuff that's happening. We can't get it right just from a computer modeling standpoint at all. So it's never going to be a perfect thing any more than with flooding.
Well, the one downstate, the worst one ever, was what it was on the ground for, what the hell was the name of that one, Bill? That was on the ground for like 70 miles or something. The thing followed a railroad track the whole way. Now, you can't say
Tri-State tornado?
Yeah, you can't believe the big guy upstairs didn't like railroads or something.
Yeah, 100 years ago, this is the anniversary of that.
Hey, speaking of anniversaries, you guys being Southsiders, guess what last week was, the 105th anniversary of where? You guys are listening to the radio up here. Vito and Nick's.
105th anniversary? Something.
Vito and Nick's, the pizza place.
Oh, wow.
They're still there.
That's important.
Yeah. The lady who runs it's the granddaughter and or great-granddaughter or somebody, and said, what did your father tell you? He said, no matter how bad business is, don't ever compromise on the quality or nobody will ever come back.
Huh?
Interesting. But, Bill, why? I mean, is it just the last, I mean, you know, we're in an age where if somebody goes to a baseball game and a guy makes a nice catch, he's the greatest player he ever saw, right, that ever lived. I mean, we can't kind of go there, but it seems to me that the Tornado Alley has dropped. Is that an El Nino effect, La Nina? Does that happen from time to time, or is this something
weird?
Yeah,
I would not be the best one to predict stuff like tornadoes. You know, I think those are complex weather events, and hard for me to say that. The flooding, I understand a little bit better. That, yeah, I think we're going to see more extreme weather events in terms of either drought or surplus water in the form of flooding. That I'm pretty, and I'm seeing it. I mean, the state of Texas is going into a special session literally next week to. They've got several items on their agenda, but one of them is to make money available for flood warning systems. And I have a feeling they're going to just go through the whole state and say, if you don't have this, we're going to give it to you. And, you know, they're going to do a lot of things with, because they're really reeling from this the situation in Kerrville.
Well, how did they get back? Now we have Jan Ann, more of the legal perspective. How could they go through a review of the whole floodplain and come up with the idea that part of the camp was in whatever the term I used earlier, the danger zone, not just, you know, in the floodplain where you're liable to get your feet wet. We're talking about the floodplain where you're liable to get washed away. And they not only didn't move them in a big renovation, but they built more. How do you get the permit for that? And knowing you have all these kids there, how does that county decide not to have a warning system when everybody else seems to have? I mean, how does that even happen? I mean, I just, John, how does somebody decide they're going to, you know, build a? It's one thing to go camping in the Wisconsin River, floodplain when you think there's no rain. It's quite another to build a camp there, a permanent camp. I mean, how does something like that even? How does somebody just?
But not just a permanent camp, but do you know that this camp, this one camp, housed 750 kids? That's a big camp.
That is pretty darn big. We've talked, and Bill, by the way, you're quoted a lot on the show, is the people who do these kinds of, you know, the engineers that have worked, I think pretty much do their job, and like you've mentioned. But who's the guy or the lady who's supposed to be in the spot that says, wait a minute, you're a little too close to the river, why you're there we don't know.
But I would bet that there is city code at the city of Kerrville or the county of Kerr, one of the two, that they had restrictions for building that close to that river. In some way that got finessed under some kind of story that, well, this isn't really a house. This is just a dorm for temporary, you know, campers or something.
Really?
And I can only imagine, you know, when they had that shooting out in Uvalde, which is kind of out in the same neck of the woods a few years ago, I would think the personal injury attorneys are circling this one like you would not believe, because I think those kind of issues, and if they found that the city did not do what they were supposed to do, I think that's, you know, when you're talking about a bunch of kids, I think the settlement numbers would be massive.
But how do you not have a dude, let's say a dude like you or Jan or Jimmy or whoever, to say, okay, wait a minute, we know we have a danger spot here, and somehow these guys weaseled around the rules. We better make sure they have the best alarm system on earth. And yet, another county piece of the county says, well, this county doesn't need alarms. At least you would try and make up for it somehow, and it doesn't appear like they did that.
But those are the elected officials. Even though the city engineer could tell them, hey, you need an alarm system, they could say, sorry, we don't have the money for that, and we don't want to wake up people. And it really boils down to the elected officials can make those calls to do things or not do them. And, I mean, if you're a city engineer and if you had that situation, the thing you have to do is they're not going along with something that's a life-saving thing. You just got to resign and go to the media with it, do something like that. But
well, how do you fight? You bring up another point, and this maybe is more of a legal question for Jan. How do you go from the point where every night there's, you know, a severe thunderstorm watch, or every I'm not going to say, but every day there's a tornado watch, a tornado warning, yet there kind of never is one. It's like, I mean, it's like every golf course, if there's lightning within 50 miles, they throw you out, or a football field. And the fact is, you know, then there's never, none ever comes by. I mean, yet you don't want to stop doing that, but you don't want to do it too often either. It's, how do you get a happy medium on that? Because otherwise nobody pays attention to it.
This is what drives me nuts about any severe weather event, you know, with its TV coverage, because it goes from, you know, famine to feast, and it turns into a, you know, ridiculous kind of sideshow where they suspend all programming and have, you know, many people, you know, yelling at you and showing radar, you know, depictions and, you know, people on the ground watching the, you know, the storms develop. And it's hard to get a sense if, you know, you're in that viewing area where you are in all of this, unless the storm is overhead and you can hear it. Otherwise, it's just, it becomes sort of a ratings grab where they're pushing panic and, you know.
See, the other thing about this episode is it didn't appear to me that they had established evacuation plans. And in other words, if you were doing something for one of the things they did at the camp was they made all the kids and the counselors surrender their cell phones. So nobody had a cell phone. From what I understand, they didn't have walkie-talkies. They had nothing. They were out in these little dormitories without any electronic communications. They should have had plans for, you know, those kind of communications. Hey, we got to get everybody out. And they should have practiced them, you know, the first day at the camp, all the campers. Okay, here's what we're going to do in the middle of the night. And you would want to have a generator on the building so there would be some sort of lighting. And everybody get in line and we march up this hill 40 feet up and then we're out of the flood. And, you know, grab your teddy bear and let's go. But it appears they didn't have any of that. You know, it was just complete.
Well, according to this one article, Bill, they would disagree with you in one area. They claim all the written procedures were totally up to snuff. And you were going to evacuate this way and blah, 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 and use this door and walk straight uphill. And yeah, I think what you're saying, it might have been written, but they didn't sure as hell didn't practice it.
Yeah, I can't imagine having something like that where you wouldn't have, I mean, just imagine you go on a cruise. What's the first thing you do? They do an evacuation simulation. Everybody, you know, go to your station and get ready to jump in the boat off the side, you know, all that stuff. I think that sort of dedication was lacking here.
It passed a state inspection on July 2nd, just 2 days before the deadly flooding, with inspectors noting that emergency and evacuations were in place, although this was not detailed in the report. So they actually had guys there on July 2nd. I think those guys feel. Ugh.
I would say they're not in a good spot.
No. Well, so if you go back and revisit every place like this, how many others are around like this that all of a sudden got to close or move if you get all of a sudden get serious about this stuff?
There's a bunch of them out there. Everything is a camp. All kinds of camps. So I would imagine that the camping industry will be in for some significant changes after this thing, because no one's going to let them operate the way they've been operating, apparently. There are going to be changes. And then the potential for litigation here, I mean, I think these camps go out of business after they get sued.
Well, they have any... Well, Jan, it's your bailiwick. You talk... They're not gonna be able to pay 100 and some people $20 million a piece. Nobody's got that kind of money, do they?
No. You know, this is really how I guess the system is more or less designed to work. People get complacent when there isn't some disaster facing you, you know, on a regular basis. So you don't, you know, worry about it. You don't, you know, even think about it. And all of a sudden, when something happens, everything goes into high gear, and you've got, you know, greater sensitivity to flood maps and flood insurance, building permits for a while, and then that will change depending on what happens in the future. And there's just so much that can't be, you know, predicted. You know, now that we've got more people in some of these places than we ever had before, we're going to see more collisions between people and natural events. It just kind of stands to reason.
Well, Jan, how do you find out, is there a deep pocket, or is there any way you can get it to the county? I mean, are they... They're probably not liable for not having alarms, are they? Or how do you, if you're the guy at TV with the hat looking for the personal injury stuff, how do you find out if there's enough money here for you to go after anybody?
Yeah, I there's no, you know, municipal body, you know, or county body that's got enough to handle exposure here, for this or other events like it. You know, so they don't have the kind of, you know, resources they could just start writing checks to people, and they don't want to do that from a legal standpoint unless they're forced to. You probably see, you know, class action suits of some kind against various bodies. I don't know if it's going to be against FEMA. I haven't looked at the flood maps for this area, but they wouldn't necessarily tell the whole story anyway.
I think the flood maps, really is according to what I'm reading here, John, the flood maps absolutely did tell the whole story. They said they were all in a flood plain, and the ones in the lower ones were in a there's a serious flood plain, and they should have been built, and they built more of them 5 years ago, which is weird.
Right, and that, I mean, that would give you access to insurance if you want to pay for it, but otherwise, you know, it isn't like FEMA's going to step in and start settling claims here.
They called it a floodway. In Illinois, is there anything in a floodplain that's called a floodway, which means like the really dangerous spot? I never heard that term before I read this article.
I'm sure there are. I just can't, get any kind of maps up on, online here to show what these things look like when they're depicted and what the standards are for determining the risk factors. But yeah, I'm sure even in, around the Chicago area, I'm sure there are places, just given the configuration of the land, the proximity to a waterway of any kind, that there's always a possibility of erosion and shifting boundaries, and all of a sudden there's exposure and maybe no great danger where there never was any before. So.
Well, Nancy will be on later, but I think she told us, Bill, you know a lot about Chicago. I think she said there is no, with great pride, the city of Chicago says there is no floodplain in the city.
That's interesting.
Well, I guess if it rains and it fills up your basement, it's not a floodplain, it's just a dirty basement, right?
Yeah.
That's what we got the deep tunnel for.
I just punched in my zip code on, the FEMA site to determine if you're in a flood risk, and my zip code, 60630, takes in a lot of different places. The North Branch of the Chicago River is a half a mile from me, and it routinely causes flooding and houses and offices and stores nearby to it, and we frequently get water in the basement here, but it's not a floodplain, so, go figure.
Well, we ended up, the place I currently live is on the north side, and it's, an old, real old area of the city, in terms of housing stock, not the best, even though people manage to put million-dollar houses on a 30-foot lot, which is odd to me, but they do. And the building I'm in has to be 110 years old or so. We flooded a couple times, and finally, we said enough, and we ended up putting this $10,000 thing in the front yard, which essentially stops the water from coming in, backing up. And since we've had that, we haven't had an issue, knock on wood. But one of the plumbers who was going to do this for me was a city historian, in regards to plumbing. Well, when I moved in there, the basement had, the downstairs essentially had an earth ground. And, there was some plywood down there. And after the flood, of course, we put concrete and so forth in there. But the guy was telling me that all those places were built with the downstairs, what was now would be the garden apartment, was just the downstairs. And the earthen floors were considered to be place for the water to go. I can't imagine that, but the guy was saying, in 1890, or the hell they built these places, he said that was if the street backed up, it just backed into everybody's downstairs, and it was all dirt anyway, nobody cared. Is that even possible, Bill? Would ever have thought like that?
I wasn't around back then, but it sounds pretty shaky.
Yeah, it sure does, doesn't it? Maybe because they knew they were dirt, they just didn't care. But we're not exactly talking about clean water. But if you flood in the city, it's usually back up a sewer water. It's not. But I guess what is happening though? I don't know if you guys notice this, but John probably has. Is the first attempt to not have people's basement back up was there's if you go after a big storm now, you'll see all this water. We used to call it puddles when we were a kid. They call it ponding now. You'll see this water kind of backing up in the street over what should be a sewer. And what they did is they put gauges in the street where if there's too much water, they stop it. So it can't it can't enter the sewer and it can't come in your basement. And the problem that is, if you happen to have the lowest house on the block, that puddle, ponding, whatever you want to call it, actually could run over your parkway and into your downstairs, like through the window. which just happens in some blocks, which nobody ever thought would happen until they did this. So everything, sort of everything you do, Bill, is has another reaction to it, right?
Well, you know, the city of Chicago has what's known as combined sewers. Your sewers take drainage and wastewater. And that's very common in the Midwest, Northeast. Where I live, or let's just say the city of Dallas, you have what's known as separate sewers. You have a whole system dedicated to wastewater and a completely separate system for drainage, which is a lot better. It kind of minimizes the mixing of the waters and problems with basement flooding and all this stuff. But what Chicago did in the 70s, you know, when they dug those deep tunnels, remember if you drive around, you see these piles of limestone, you know, 10 stories high where they were digging these tunnels, that I've always understood that the deep tunnel really corrected a lot of that basement flooding in Chicago.
Yeah, sort of.
The house that I grew up in, we used to flood all the time. And after the deep tunnel got done, it never flooded again.
There actually have been as many times they've had to open the river to the lake in the last 15 years than in the, if you took a 15-year thing before deep tunnel. I mean, the places that has expanded so much. But you know what, Bill? The deep tunnel finally was just done. When I say complete, was a little bit of a history, you know more. But by the way, why didn't you just get a job with Tunney Construction, be an executive there, and be rich and never had to move? They've had that job for how many years? 60 years? They were doing that when we were in high school, for God's sake.
Yeah.
They were.
And then, plus, you
brought all that money in was Charles Percy.
Well, plus, you could have been the ambassador to Ireland like Tunney was.
I would love that.
Oh, you'd be perfect. you'd be the guy. Imagine every night all you do is go schmooze people. You'd love that.
You'd love it, yeah.
But the what happened was, Bill, they finished the tunnels, but the reservoirs, I think that the thing was it finally declared done like a year ago, Jan? And only
and it was completely superseded by it's already antiquated.
But I think the last link was the quarry out in McCook, right? Isn't that now where they pour all the stuff? Because the tunnels themselves could be filled up in like 20 minutes, right?
Yeah, and they do.
Yeah. But they needed essentially a dumping ground, and people resisted having the dumping ground in their area. They used the what do they call those things, Bill, in McCook when they got all the sewage and they put it out in the air for a while? They drained some of those things, and those were the overflows for a while. But getting the overflow has been the big problem, the final spot. Okay, now that we can whisk it away from neighborhoods, what do we do with it?
And I remember in the 80s, early 80s, I did a job for the Hammond Sanitary District, and they were a big polluter of Lake Michigan, and they were kind of identified as the ones that fouled all the Chicago beaches. So the city of Chicago, state of Illinois, they didn't mess around. They filed suit, and it got to the Supreme Court. Only time I ever did a job where I had a court order from the Supreme Court.
Wow. Addressed to you?
It was addressed to me, but we got the job to do the fix in a big hurry. And we designed a system to capture all this excess flow and pump it into a proper wastewater treatment plant. And there was a lot of pressure to get the thing done because, you know, the beaches opened in May, whatever day in May.
How long did it take you to do that? That's not a two-week job.
Oh, it wasn't, but it went really fast. I remember going down to Indianapolis to get the permits because I had to get them from the state of Indiana for different things. And we worked with a big law firm in Chicago who was representing the state of Illinois and the Metropolitan Sanitary District of Greater Chicago. And we have to talk to him every day. And I said, well, I'm going down to Indianapolis to get the permits. And normally, you know, we would mail these things in and wait and said, no, we were going to fly them down, throw them on somebody's desk and say, we want this stamped or whatever we're going to do. So he said, when you get to Indianapolis, if they if they don't say, if they don't use the word it's approved, call me. So I got down there, big roll of plans and stuff and calculations, and went into the office of these guys who were, you know, probably not doing a whole lot. And I said, you know, I'm doing this big project to clean up the Lake Michigan, and I need the approval. Well, put it in the box and we'll get back to you in a couple months. I said, no, I need it today. Huh? And they just laughed at me. And I said, okay, I'm going to take the laugh, meaning you're not approving it. So give me a minute. Of course, we didn't have cell phones in those days. I went out to a payphone, called the attorney. They're not approving the plans. He says, wait at the desk. It's about to get approved. I just walked back in, and in 5 minutes, the guy came out with a stamp and said, where do you want me to stamp it? Boom, boom, boom.
Did he even look at him?
Glanced at him. You know, he kind of trusted that. The engineering outfit that I worked for in those days was pretty well regarded, so he said, yeah, I think you guys know what you're doing. So
if you unrolled all your plans, like any engineer, you probably had like 50 documents there, right?
Oh, we had all kinds of stuff. Yeah, I was like parting stuff back and forth. But he gave us all the approvals in a day. Got back on a plane, went back to Chicago, put the job out to bid.
So what did you end up, I mean, what we're talking about here, for those that don't, Your waste treatment facilities usually are, I'm going to say usually, but Bill, kick me if I'm wrong, are capable of handling, on average, the waste treatment of a place. The problem is, especially if you have one of these storm sewers combined with the toilet stuff, you don't get it on average. So you get a whole bunch one day and then, you know, not so much the next. So if you don't have some kind of a retention pond or something, you've got a problem, and that's when you have to open up the river to the lake and blah blah blah. So did you guys end up finding some place to essentially to put it until
we did. We pumped it from Hammond south 5 miles to a wastewater treatment plant. They had capacity to take it.
Really?
And we went through the Standard Oil refinery. That was another fun one to get permits, but you know, or at least wasn't so much a permit, it was a permission to operate inside the refinery, because there's a lot of combustible materials and piping everywhere. You know, it's kind of dangerous place to work. But again, we had our little Supreme Court order, which was kind of like a get out of jail free card, and just said, here's what we're doing. So
if you guys are humping along and you've got all your permits, how fast can you go in putting pipe down?
Well, we hired lots of different contractors. We broke the job up into five pieces. We bid it out. We had five different guys working 7 days a week, probably extended days, you know. And I want to say we put in like a 54-inch pipe. It was a pretty sizable conveyance system. And we had huge penalties for the contractors. If they were a day late, they, you know, got financial penalties, and so everybody was on the ball. And
if you can't find a spot that's downhill, how do you pump it? You got to pump all along the way.
You pump it, yeah. That's what we did there. We had a pump station that was already there, but we put in all new bigger pumps to take all this flow to this other spot, which was higher. But that's, you know, typically you try to avoid that. But this is the best we had to do, and We got it working. And I remember the news, the media in Chicago, they had like their television crews down at the pump station. Are they going to make it? Are they going to turn it on? You know, and it was all big excitement, and we did.
Well, good for you. John, maybe more toward you or even maybe Jim, you look at this Kennedy Expressway project, and boy, I can remember when I was in high school, my buddy Jim Verbeck and I spent day after day out trying to get hired as a helper. And when they did the Dan Ryan way back then, redid the Dan Ryan for the first time, and everything was 24/7. I mean, they worked like dogs to get the thing done, because they realized what a pain in the ass it was for the city. Well, the city's gotten bigger. The north side, if the Kennedy's gone, you can't get anywhere from anywhere. It's not like the south side where they actually do have streets. How did we go from 24/7 to somebody getting the job, inconveniencing people for 6 months? There's never a second shift. There's never more than 30 people working, never work weekends. who makes that call, John? I mean, I mean, you know, Bill can opine from the not enough workers side or whatever it is, but how does, I mean, I look at this project, maybe because I'm more mature, I say this thing has been a goat bleep the whole day. It should have been done in half the time, and nobody cares. Well, you can't drive anywhere.
I think, you know, the number of people available is certainly a part of it now, more than, you know, in the past probably too, but it's also, you know, a sign of just kind of the degradation of the whole, you know, oversight and by the city. And I think this is typical of cities everywhere now, that there is no emphasis on cost saving or, you know, getting the thing done early and, you know, kicking in money to, you know, the general contractor or whoever's got the, you know, biggest part of it to get the thing done early if possible, let alone years later. And I just don't see that there's anybody willing to take any kind of political heat or, you know, a financial penalty for, you know, dragging it out as long as possible, which is the antithesis of what you want. If you think that the city depends on these kinds of infrastructure projects to go well for everybody's benefit and to keep the economy pumping, they go about it in a pretty strange way. So I've just become thoroughly disgusted at you know, the problems associated with traffic, and not just big projects. I see it in my neighborhood with little projects, you know, torn up sidewalks that have been torn up for 18 months now.
Yeah, no, there's nobody ever there.
And I've filled out 311 reports to the city, and I signed a case number to it, and nothing ever happens. So I don't get the sense that anybody is keeping track of this, and nobody is paying any kind of price for it, unfortunately. So it's now kind of baked into the system, and everybody expects it to be, you know, a 5 or 10 year project. And it's great if you can do it, because eventually you'll make even more money that way, and you don't have to hurry up and get the thing done early to get a premium paid. You just drag the premium out over a longer period of time, and everybody seems okay with that. Nobody squawks. So,
Bill, how did this happen? I mean, I just so happen I drive, you know, to Audrey's. They did one side of, you know, that big, huge bridge, LaGrange Road, going over to the Des Plaines River and the Sanitarian Ship Canal. It's like, it's got to be pushing a mile long. Well, they decided they were going to redo one of the sides. It had to be 4 years. And all during COVID, you go by and there's three people. How do you work construction from home? I mean, if you saw these bids, Bill, you know, you're been at this a while, your eyebrows are going to go right up and say, wait a minute, we've got 4 years to do this? What the hell?
I mean, another technique we used to use, and a lot of these things that I'm mentioning, you don't see them anymore. We had a thing called an early completion bonus. We would pay you by the day. If the deadline was December 1st, every day ahead of December 1st, we would give you $10,000, because it was worth it to us to get it out of there. And you bring these kind of things up nowadays, and of course I'm retired now. People look at you like you stepped off of the lunar lander. You know, they're like, "What? Why would we ever do something like that?" I mean, nobody's in a hurry, and they should be.
Well, I mean, anybody who looks at the north side, without the Kennedy, is pretty much unlivable. I mean, you, especially since all the other streets that parallel, you've turned half of them into bike lanes. It's unreal. You look at when the Kennedy's like that, you look at Elston Avenue. You can't. It's gridlock, Dan. John, is it, or Clybourne? Same thing.
Yeah.
And yet, I mean, there's nobody there. I mean, what was the burn interchange? 11 and a half years.
Yep.
Well, Bill, who decides this stuff? I mean, when
well, whatever commission is doing the project, if it's the state of Illinois or the toll road group, those people are making those calls, and they can make tougher calls. They could push it if they wanted to, but they're being convinced by somebody. Oh, if you try to, I was in a meeting not too long ago where I was trying to get something done at the city of Austin, and you know, some project that was just circling forever, and the lady who's in charge of the wastewater, the water program, she said, you know, and she looks me in the eye and says, whenever we try to do something real fast, we screw it up. I said, Well, maybe if you tried it a little more often, you'd get a little better at it, you know?
It's not what she wanted to hear, Bill.
No, she didn't like that.
By the way, did you guys have a drink after that?
No, I don't think so. I think she was she had enough of me.
But I don't. Who gets... I mean, the first year Kennedy thing, it was... The backup, I think, was way worse than anticipated. So then last year, they did the express lanes. For those that don't know, there's four lanes going south, four lanes going north, and there's two lanes in the middle that they reverse. So in rush hours, six lanes going one way and four the other. Well, so last year, supposed to be over in, I think, September. It ended up going to January, Bill, because they somehow had a software issue with the gates. Now, they couldn't put people out there and manually open them and close them for 2 months. They had to wait till they opened up automatically. So the thing didn't go to, does the mayor, if we had a mayor that was worth a crap, could the mayor say, hey, guys, I don't care what you're doing, but you're not starting next summer until you get me a better plan. I don't care. You're not stepping foot on my expressway until I get a better plan. You're not screwing this up again for 9 months.
Those are the kind of questions need to get asked. And yeah. The problem is a lot of people, they're in an elected office, don't understand these things very well. You know, they see roads get built, but they have no clue how they get built. And so they're very reluctant to stick their toe in the middle of it because they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're talking about. Well, but all of this stuff could be tightened up.
What do you make of this is kind of just a general political question, and I don't really want to delve into one side or the other, but it seems like in general to me, and I've read, not as much as John, maybe you, on older politicians, people that used to be in government and their backgrounds and things, and now it seems like the gap between the skill set you need to get one of these jobs, I'll call them a job, and the skill set you want in office has never been wider to me. I mean, I don't think, Brendan Johnson knows anything about any of the stuff we're talking about, to be honest with you. I don't think our president, as he berates the Federal Reserve, I don't think the man knows anything about monetary theory, has no idea about the economy, has no clue. I don't think if you gave him I think they're all kind of like this in some regard. That's a problem. I don't know how you, I mean, you compare that with like a Churchill or a Roosevelt or the guys that ran some of these generals that were in World War II and Korean War that were the most well-read people. I mean, when you put people in office that don't have any of these skills, I know you can always say, well, put good people around you. And no matter who you are, no matter how smart you are, there's still things you don't know. And, if any of us got elected, we might have a skill set that a president or mayor doesn't have, but I'd be the first to say I don't know anybody's name of who runs Africa. You better get me a terrific Africa guy, because otherwise I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. There's always going to be areas like that, but I just get the idea that these guys don't have anywhere near, it's a gross generalization, the background where if you're going to list the skill set of people in these offices, they don't even seem to have. Is it just me, or am I just getting grumpy?
It may be true, Tom, but I think it's a bigger problem. There's no fear on the part of any of these politicians, especially the local ones. Think about, an alder person in Chicago. And if you really had somebody who cared about appearances and thought that maybe my key to getting reelected is not to let this project sit, on hold the whole time with nobody doing anything. So someday somebody's going to come in my office and either blow my head off or, lay me out in lavender, and I have to be ready for that, and I want to give people what they want. It's just good politics to do that. Now there's no fear on the part of any politician. I mean, it isn't so much that they don't know any better, but they don't really care what kind of blowback they encounter. They can always push it off onto some other part of the bureaucracy.
What do you make of Bill's comment that the people today don't even know what the hell we're talking about? What do you mean? Why would you ever work 24 hours? They've never seen it.
It's better business from their standpoint to keep the thing rolling and rolling, indefinitely. That to them is a sign of, somebody's, making money here, and we're not having to pay it all up front. We're just fine with it taking forever. We don't care about the pain and inconvenience of our constituents. That's very low. You know, that's the last thing on their priority list. And nobody at that level seems to be able to start any kind of political fire anymore or any interest in doing so. Well, that's what's so funny about retail politics to me now, that you would think with so much importance assigned to activism and, you know, people squawking and yelling, how complacent people really are about bread and butter stuff like a construction project or, you know, a bad sidewalk in your ward, and nobody has any interest whatsoever in, you know, lifting a finger to get the thing done quickly.
But if all of you guys, and they're on the show this morning, and Nancy walked into your local, I know this isn't the group to go to the coffee shop, your local emporium, and asked 10 people, by the way, how long did it take to remodel the Burn Interchange? How long did it take to build the entire Western Railroad from Omaha to Sacramento? How long did it take to build Hoover Dam? How long did it take to... And that the Burn Interchange took like 2 and 3 times more than all of them? Think anybody even knows that?
Well, it took the CTA, you know, longer to repair 4 stations and, you know, of the L system and to make it, you know, handicap friendly than it did to build some entire lines of the whole system. So
that's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bill, I mean, it's unfair to say, you know, it took 3.5 years to build Hoover Dam, because it was, what, 20 years in the making in a design, and maybe even more than that, right?
Right.
Same thing kind of with the Golden Gate. But once guys started, of course, you didn't care so much if, well, you cared if people got killed, but, I mean, it was, the OSHA probably would not approve today, right, the way they did it. I mean, how much of it's that? How much of it's unavailable of labor? How many, or you don't want to pay people? Or what do you think it is?
I think the availability of labor is certainly a problem, and it's being kind of enhanced right now by the fact that so many of these guys are getting pulled off of jobs and being arrested, you know. I've always said around here in Texas, if you were to take out all the immigrant labor, nothing would get done. They're doing all the dirty work. They're the ones digging with the shovel. They're the ones running the backhoe. You know, they're the ones doing the work. And I don't know how you get by, but I just think too, you know, people don't think like you think, like hurry up, get stuff done. I think everybody's so complacent. Yeah, it's 11 years sounds about right. Let's just do it, you know, and they don't give a damn. And elected officials that are supposed to be watching over this stuff, many of whom don't know a highway from a tree, but they're not smart enough to rely on people that do know. And that's where I think it's missing. I mean, maybe you don't know about highway design or construction, but you can certainly get somebody on your team that does and say, I want to move this along. I'm not going to put up with any 11 years. And we're going to figure out how to get this done. If we got to run 3 shifts 7 days a week, let's go. It may be more expensive, no question about it, but it may be worth it.
Well, if your whole design is to have less wasted hours of people in cars, it could very well be worth it. Bill, last question. Obviously, we'll have you on again soon. The drought versus too much rain, that's sort of always been a Texas phenomenon, hasn't it?
Well, I think probably so, but it's probably exacerbated because there's way more people here now. So where in the past you could have gotten by, but around here they talk about the drought of record from an episode in the 1950s where 7 years they didn't have much rain. Well, we blew through that last decade.
Really?
And so... There's something going on here, and like I've said in the past on your show, Tom, that the state of Texas is going to put an enormous amount of money in building water facilities, likely in the form of desalinization plants on the coast. They've decided that this is now going to be a limiting feature to economic development, and they're going to put some money in and get some water created, because there's just not enough here. And, you know, the lake system the city of Austin relies on on July 3rd was 47% full. So it was more than half empty. That's the drinking water supply.
What's the normal number in July? It's probably not 100%, is it?
No. But it's when you start to get into the 40s and knowing you're in the summer where it's not going to rain much, we probably drop a percent every 2 weeks. And a few, like the drought we had last decade, we got to 33%.
Wow.
So anyways.
Well, Bill, we got a
47, and now we're at 67. We're probably at 70 today.
Well, next time you're on, I know you're not Mr. Meteorologist, but you know a lot about this stuff. We have you on with Janet. What happens when, we'll talk about why would you have a 7-year drought? What caused the Dust Bowl? Was it a La Nina? You know,
all that stuff has a lot to do with it. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll talk about that next time, bud. You take care. You golfing today?
No, I got a little couple things to do, but I'll be ready to go tomorrow.
Well, so it'll be 110.
That's okay. Play at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's not 110.
There you go. SP futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 67. We're running a little over. You want to go right to Nancy, Matt, or what do you want to do?
Yeah, sure. Sounds good.
Let's do that.
I'll have to bow out for today, Tom. I got a couple things that I got going on.
But yeah, hey, good luck with all your stuff, Jen.
Thanks.
Is this just family tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just immediate family.
All right, bud. You take care of yourself.
Thanks, Tom.
We have.
Hey, Chief, let's go to break real quick. Let's get Nancy on.
Yeah, okay. SP futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 64.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and a good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
20,000 francs says it isn't.
Is that a serious offer?
I just paid out 20. I'd like to get it back.
Make it 10. I'm only a poor, corrupt official.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm out, Matt Byrne on the board. Mr. Jim in. Mr. Jim Lawler in studio.
Yes, I am.
And, We have Nancy on the SP futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 64. Matt Byrne, is that you? You're only a poor corrupt official.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
I can see Jimmy. I can see you being a corrupt official, alderman.
Thanks, Tom.
Alderman.
I really appreciate that.
I can see you being. Could you imagine Jimmy as an alderman, man?
I think I can imagine him in a Casablanca.
Oh, God, yeah.
Usual Suspects.
Yeah, he'd be one of the Usual Suspects.
That's good, right. Yeah.
Good. What about I like the part? Round up twice the Usual Suspects. Well, you know, do we have Nance?
We do indeed. Yeah,
Nance, how are you? Nance, unmute thyself.
Unmute thyself.
There we can hear you now. We got you now. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
I'm doing all right. By the way, I didn't see you this weekend.
I know. I was ditching you.
I know. Well, it's, you know, that's what happens, I guess.
I don't know why Jim and Matt are there either. I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, well, what did you make of the conversation about the floodplains and all that stuff? Were you listening at all?
No, I didn't. I don't really know that much about floodplains. I mean, what did you guys talk about?
Well, we're talking about the place down in Texas and how who actually does the floodplains. And Bill was saying, didn't he say, Jimmy, they're all done by FEMA, right?
Yes.
Right.
And he said, but in the Chicago area, they're done by the Metropolitan Sanitary District. I think he said that, didn't he, Jim?
I believe that is correct.
And we're just kind of talking about the difference between, you know, what happens when they get updated. Now, have you ever had a situation, Nance, where you gave somebody a mortgage? You arranged a mortgage for someone, and they were not in a floodplain, which means what? You have to get flood insurance, and you get that from the government, right? Not from the insurance company. Anyway, you can explain that in a second. But my question is, you ever had a situation where there was a redo of the floodplain, and the old one had the guy across the street in it, and not you, and now the new one has you in it? What happens if all of a sudden you're now in one?
You have to get flood insurance.
But does anybody even notify you?
Yeah, they do. They do. They do. I have a guy who, that's exactly what happened. He was never in a floodplain, and then somehow they rezoned, and he wound up in a floodplain, and he did not want to pay the flood insurance, so he paid off his mortgage, and he did not pay the flood insurance.
But as soon as the institution that held the mortgage, and that's Jimmy's expert on, has that ever happened to you when you were doing mortgage servicing, Jimmy? And all of a sudden you get like five letters from somebody saying these guys are now in floodplains?
All the time.
Really?
Yes.
People
get really upset because, I don't know anybody who actually likes it this guy just paid off his house and then he just put up with the flooding. But if it floods, then they have no insurance. In other words, if your basement would flood, let's just say, from the basement to the first level, you have to make those repairs yourself.
But those are Illinois floods. That's not what happened down in Texas, where the river comes and knock your house down a block, right? But Illinois floods are basically your backyard or your basement, correct?
Jim, do you think that's true?
That's a good question. You know, I was with a servicer, so we service all 50 states. But it was interesting, a while ago, I don't know, about 3 years ago, we did have a rash in Illinois that all of a sudden they were on 100-year floodplains. And yeah, the calls come in constantly, and you know, then they're wondering, do I have flood insurance? And then you have to tell them, you know, you have to call your insurance company, and the insurance company tells them no.
Correct.
And then it leads to all this fighting back and forth of who's going to cover my basement. Yeah. And in Illinois, that's generally what happens. Now, in other places, I'm sure they're getting a flood of calls now from the people in Texas. The other thing that we didn't bring up, Tom, and I just thought of it, was if FEMA goes away, what is going to happen when you do have a flood and you can't pay your mortgage? Generally, you get a 90-day forbearance through FEMA. If there is no FEMA, you get no 90 days, which means if you don't pay, you fall behind, your credit goes down, all sorts of fun will start to happen again.
Now, Jim, are you saying that FEMA's going to go away? Who's going to take that away?
The emperor himself.
Trump's been...
He claims on November 30th he is going to dismantle FEMA.
And then what? Give it back to the states?
Exactly.
Ouch.
Well, I picked up somebody last night at the airport, and he was in Fort Myers, and he said he saw the damages from the floods, and what has it been, 2 years? And he said there's just blocks and blocks of empty houses where people just got up and left because no one's paid out yet.
It's I've told you this story, and it's my sister-in-law's, must be her cousin or somebody, her friend, was in a condo building. I'm going to say 20 stories. They're on like the ninth floor. And there's the beach. There's something. There's the road. There's the parking lots. And then the place, like all along Florida. And they're the place. Well, of course, to make matters worse, all the idiots left their cars in the lot and just left. And so the cars are bobbing in the air or in the water, banging into the building on like the fifth floor, right? This is 2 years ago. They have not made a determination as to whether the place is fixable or not. They don't even know yet. So, and on top of this, what makes it worse, you guys remember because you're in on this. What was it, Jimmy? Was it 2.5 years ago? The side of the building collapsed or something on the east side over in Lauderdale or somewhere.
Longer than that, but yes.
And then all,
yeah, but it was in Fort Lauderdale. It was in Fort Lauderdale.
It was Fort Lauderdale, and the problem is that it had to do with the building inspectors that, they looked the other way. Yeah, you can build. And then they hit it could have been a shift or a sand thing. You know, in Florida, they have sand pits a lot that happen to houses that all of a sudden just fall into it because the land shifts. And so it's not a safe structure anymore.
Well, you can actually build pretty well on sand if you do it right. And this what they had, the swimming pool on that side. Was that the story? And the swimming pool was too heavy. And anyway, the side of the building kind of came down. And so Florida already was on amazingly alert for all these buildings built in sort of the same era to all get inspected and repaired, right, Nance? And they found all kinds of buildings that needed serious work. So virtually every construction company in Florida was already on high alert, working as fast as they can. Then comes the hurricane. Am I correct on this? And all of a sudden you've got all these other issues. And wasn't Carl talking about if, say your house is two blocks from the water and it gets swept away and you're on a slab. Well, the new building codes now, you probably have to raise that house at the very least, right, Nance? Maybe 8 feet, 10 feet, whatever the number is. So you, even if you do get a check, the check cannot cover the cost. And by the way, Nance, you are a genius on this. You mentioned that's the big problem in California, in those areas by the wall, even though they're by the water.
What right.
That if all of a sudden you have to replace your building, not only have the cost gone to the roof anyway, if you have to replace your building with a new set of building codes, that check doesn't cover it, does it?
No.
So as then what? Then what do you? Know. Then what do you do? You sell the property and hand the check to the next guy and say, "Here's your head start." Or what do you do?
I don't have an answer for that. Do you, Jim? I mean, people are just, according to what this guy said last night that I picked up, he said he thought he couldn't believe what he saw. Considering he said it's like 3 years later. I don't know if it is really 3 years later, if that's...
I'm going to say two and a half for the one in where all the Irish people are, on the southwest coast, and then the one further north was a year after that. Am I correct on that, Jimmy? The one up by Tampa?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
The one by Fort Myers was maybe 2.5 years ago. That's one where Bill Murphy's buddy brought his two cars inland, Nance. And mm-hmm. for safekeeping, they got washed away there. The building he had them in the interior got washed away. The building was gone. The cars were gone. They never found the cars. They're somewhere in the Everglades.
I just never realized it could take this long to make the repairs. I guess I don't know what they're going to do. But he said the home prices are really falling. He said one home after another is for sale.
Well, when you say the repairs, do you think the checks have been issued? I mean, they haven't to my sister-in-law's friend.
No, I don't think any of the checks have been issued, and I think that's part of the problem. I don't know how we're going to fix this, Jim. What is servicing going to do for this? They're just stuck, right?
Yeah, we're pretty much are stuck in regards to that, Nancy, because what happens is that it goes back and forth on the damages, the not the appraisal, but the submission from the insurance company, and it goes back and forth. And then at some point, some of the investors at that point are like, you know what? We're just going to go to foreclosure and then let whoever buys the property deal with the problem. It is such a hassle going back and forth, because I know what we did in Florida. There are, you have hurricane insurance, but then the hurricane insurance guy said, well, the hurricane didn't cause the damage. It was the flood that causes the damage. So now you have a back and forth on who on the insurance companies will pay the damages. And you're right. It could go on for years.
It just seems, I was just surprised. I didn't realize that. Is hurricane and flood a separate insurance in
Wind and water definitely is.
Yes, it is. And they fight in between what actually caused the damage to the house. Was it the wind that did it? Was it the water that did it? Or was it the actual force of the hurricane? So that's where you have this fight. And they go back and forth in regards to that all the time.
Nance, I told you a story about the dude who's, well, we shared a spot in the OEX. Ronnie, terrific guy, whose parents had a condo. His parents long dead, but can I use the term the Redneck Riviera? Down in Biloxi. And they were, there was the beach, the something, the road and parking lot, and then there was their place. And it was a hurricane like a year after Katrina whacked into that whole coast there, the Gulf Coast between mm-hmm. New Orleans or whatever. What hurricane was that, Jimmy?
That was Katrina.
No, it was like a year after. There was another one east of there. But there was every year there was like three in a row, right? It was one of those. Anyway, Nance, the place is gone. I mean, it's just a slab. And it was probably, I'm going to say, an eight-story building. It's just gone. Nobody knows where their underwear is. And so I think it took almost a decade. Because nobody was there. Everybody evacuated. Oh, no, it was the wall of water that swept it away. Oh, no, it was the wind. And I think finally they got 45 cents on the dollar 6 to 10 years later. And then nobody rebuilt. The thing's still a slab. So I don't know what... But hey, just for instance, let's use our friend Audrey as an example. Audrey has a very nice home in Orland, and she's got to be what? Behind her is a little stream and some wetlands. And what she's got to be, what would you say, Nance? 80 feet above there?
Easy. Yeah, it's
a serious walk up the hill, because I do that for once in a while. She's never had any issue. Now, if there ended up being so Aud does not have, I don't believe, she's not in a floodplain, she doesn't have flood insurance. Now, what if there's a 5-inch rain down the road from her, and all of a sudden that comes near her backyard? I don't think it'll ever get to her house, but say it got near her backyard, and FEMA walks out there and goes, wow, we have to put these 10 houses are now considered on a floodplain. What does she have to do? Is that a call to State Farm or wherever she is, or is that a call to who sells you flood insurance? Is it
the government? FEMA.
Yeah, FEMA's the only one that sells flood insurance, so I don't know what's going to happen to that either. If you're not in floodplain time, you cannot get flood insurance.
I thought you could get a rider in the city for like basement backing up and things like that.
But that's not flood insurance.
No, but it's the way you flood in the city. But yes, it's not a river coming into your house.
Well, I don't know. Water backup. See, there's a difference, and I think Jim would agree with me. If you got water in your house because your sub pump failed, I believe that's one kind of insurance.
That's
but if
what
you
I mean.
Got water because of a hard rain that came in through your cracks and all that, you're not covered.
Correct.
There's a difference between the two statements. So if you are not in a floodplain, you cannot get flood insurance.
So if a big wind event or some tree whacked into your roof in a rainstorm and the water poured in and wrecked stuff, that's considered wind damage and you are covered?
I believe that would be correct, wouldn't you, Jim?
I think so, yes.
I think so too. But let's just say the you know, you had a crack or something like that in your foundation and you got water in there, that is not, well, like, it's not covered. But I know in Tinley, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years ago, they had a flood. It was a pure flood. There was a rain. There was a flood. And it affected, like, let's say, four homes wide that went for like a mile. No one else got any water, but this water rushed down like a river would be and went through all these homes. The cars were gone. The basements were filled. The water got in all the basements and flooded all the garages in this four-house thing that went, you know, from west to east. None of them, their policies paid out. But they only paid out the $5,000. That was it.
Whoa.
That was it. And then the mayor got involved and talked to all these insurance companies and said that, I don't know, they spent like, you know, millions of dollars having this architectural geographical study done. And that area is not cleared of floodplain, but they redesigned it so that there's a, if it would ever happen again, there's a big basin that will catch all this water. That in fact caused, you know, this phenomenon to happen. And those people were made as whole as possible out of the whole thing. But I really don't believe FEMA pays out if you're not in a floodplain. I don't think they do. Do
no,
they, Jim? I don't
no,
think there's
no,
a big
they do
exception
not.
To that.
But some parts of Tinley near Tinley Creek are in a floodplain. It's probably like 2-3 houses on each side of it, like you say.
As far as I know, Tom, not very much of Cook County's in a floodplain at all.
No, not very much. But like the area in that once in a while, Little Calumet River will flood over
in
there.
In Will County, if Tinley, part of Tinley's in Will, Will has floodplains.
Okay.
Will does have floodplains, and Will will force you to give the insurance, or you don't have a mortgage. If you don't have a mortgage, you don't need flood insurance.
Well,
then again, if you get water, you're on your own. You're self-insuring.
Well, I would bet that this place in Texas, I don't see how, if they were on that flood, what's the name of it? The floodway. Have you ever heard that term, Nance?
No, but they'll tell you not to build in a floodplain.
Well, yeah, I mean, there appears to be a delineation here, at least in Texas, according to this plate that I'm reading from the New York Post. Some of the cabins were so close to the banks of the Guadalupe River that they were considered part of the river's floodway, meaning any construction is either banned or extremely restricted. So there's the floodplain where you could get, I'll use the term, wet. Then there's the floodway, which you have no business building in, which is where, you know, I guess if the river starts to go, you're talking about really flying through there. And I'd never heard that term before. I don't think we have any of that around here. I mean, there's nothing of that change in elevation enough, right? It just, you just get
yeah,
more.
Yeah, we're one of the flattest states, aren't we?
Yeah.
Indy. So I don't think that is the issue, like you're saying.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how these guys were able to build these cabins in like 5 years ago in this floodway and not have a warning system. I mean, I don't... You know, the place was inspected on July 2nd, and they said all their emergency procedures were fine. I would like to be that inspector.
Well, I read that they were warned.
Well, they were, but they didn't have cell phones. And it's the only county that didn't have an audible, like, air raid system or tornado system. There were no big, speakers along the river. I mean, hell, if we're going to have a tornado warning in the city, that stuff goes off. You can't miss it. They're the old air raid sirens, aren't they? Back when people remembered, thought we were going to get an air raid. Anyway, you know, Nance, what's going on in your business? You read, you know, one day they say mortgage applications are up, and the next day they say they're down. What's going on?
To me, it's just the same. It's another day in paradise, of course. So they're not, no one is doing anything different than what was going on, you know, 6 months ago. I think it's a little bit busier myself, But I think it's just because people are trying to get in before the kids go back to school. They want to get out of one school district, move to another, that type of thing.
What?
But there's nothing, I mean, there's no massive amount of things going on that makes sense. So.
They were hearing, I was hearing yesterday on 60 Minutes, actually, on the way home, and they were talking about all the people that have the 3% mortgages that are absolutely locked in their place and can't go anywhere. So I'm sitting there, God, Nancy's been telling us about that for a while. Hey, I don't know if you noticed this morning, these interest rates got up this high and then they backed off pretty severely, but we got the 30-year barking at this 5% number, 4.98. We've got the 10-year barking at this 4.5, 4.44. You look at that with trepidation, Nance?
Well, I think I was more surprised last night, Tom. I saw when I came in, I at the airport, they had the TVs on to, you know, the different news stations, but they interrupted. Somebody had it on Fox, and that was the one that I happened to be walking by, and Trump had said that a reporter had said, I have no idea if it's true, false, whatever, that the Fed chairman was going to step down today. And Trump said, I don't know anything about it. He said, but that would just be great. Great.
His henchman Bessett said they're going to try and fire him for cause because of an overrun on a construction on the Fed building in Washington. Which is about big a bunch of crap as I've ever heard. But
yeah, he said the same thing. He said, I do not have any... He said, I can't confirm that. He said, he did mention that there was something going on with the building, but he said he doesn't think that that's going to...
That means he gets to fire him for cause.
You know, he was saying it's just not... He said, that's not really going to happen. He said, I wish he would step down. So I was surprised to hear that. He said, but I don't think he's going to step down. So he said, he's costing us billions of dollars a day. You know, and he went off.
Which is absolutely untrue, by the way. Absolutely untrue.
Well, I don't know. I was just like, wow, I don't think that's going to be happening. But, and he's saying we could lower the rates. Well, I don't really know if you can't, does the Fed have that much say in, I know they can lower the rates, but what's going to happen to the economy if that starts?
The Fed could, when they say lower the rates, the Fed could pour enough money in the system to where the short-term rates will drop at least tomorrow or next week or next month. That's what they can do. Now, if it gives everybody an inflation scare and saying, oops, this is the wrong thing to do, you could have the short-term rates go from 4 to 2.5 and the long-term rates go from 5 to 8. So would it help the Treasury out in their next 90-day and 6-month bill auction? Probably, because the Fed is pouring the money in. They're essentially, they're creating the money that's going to buy the Fed stuff, which is what they've been doing now for like 25 years, but Trump wants them to do more of it. I mean, he either doesn't care or doesn't know how this all works.
And well, because as far as I knew, the long-term rates are going to stay the same. I mean, because you're not...
If really all of a sudden people think that what the Fed is doing means inflation rate's going to be 5, those long-term rates are going to go up like you wouldn't believe. Robin and I had a mortgage. We had a line of credit with Continental Bank. In November they were 8.5%, and by June they were 14. So don't have any idea that this can only go up a quarter point. And Trump's convinced that they can run this down to 2% and stay there. They would have to create. They have to go back to $5 and $6 trillion build on the balance sheet.
Yeah, I didn't understand it, but then I was like, you know, I don't have time for this anyways. I was trying to find the person and get him out.
I know, it's hard to even matter, but, I mean, the idea that they're going to fire him for cause because of an overrun? God, I mean,
that's not going to happen.
It might. He might try. He'll try anything. People around him keep telling him to expand the powers, and so far he hasn't been checked. Anyway, SP Futures down 18. Nance, hopefully see you soon. SP Futures down 18. NASDAQ Futures down 63. Jimmy, thank you. Matt, nice job. We'll be a lot of people on today. Back tomorrow, Stocks
Jimmy,
and Jocks.
It was nice meeting
Stocks
you.
And Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit jetblue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's empowerhr.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit bdlcc.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to dacsresearch.net.
So you gonna get another job?
I don't think I'd like another job.
What are you gonna do about money and bills and...
You know, I've never really liked paying bills. I don't think I'm gonna do that either.